What's there left to say about Bruce Springsteen? Since he burst onto the national consciousness in 1978 with the album Born to Run and his face on the cover of Time and Newsweek magazines, Bruce has been exhaustively interviewed and analyzed. Well, Peter Ames Carlin's biography, Bruce, is now out in paperback, and it covers new ground to even avid Bruceophiles.
When Bruce was born in 1949, he was the first child to come into the family, into the Springsteen family, since they had lost, his grandparents had lost a daughter in 1927, his father's oldest child, or older sister, who had died in a tricycle accident, tragically, at 5 years old. And they were haunted by this throughout their lives, except when Bruce showed up, he was like the golden child, you know, it was like the Harry Potter of their life. It was a very strange family because neither of his grandparents worked. He lived with them for the first 7 years of his life, thinking that they were his parents because they had essentially subsumed the parental role away from his own parents. His mother had to work very hard to support the family, and the father just couldn't function a lot of the time. And so the grandparents became his caregivers, but they were very, very strange people. And that sort of set Bruce onto this kind of strange course of being the blessed holy child at home, but being part of this family that was so outside the bounds of society and freehold that he was also everywhere else. He was like this freako that nobody wanted to deal with.
This all changed with Springsteen's tremendous success, but inner demons gnawed at him until he began to get antidepressant drugs.
He said we had talked about stuff like that and we talked about his therapy, which he had done for, I think, actually since the early 80s. And then when I mentioned antidepressants, and he just sort of sat bolt upright in his chair and he said, you know, get that stuff to me and keep it coming.
Did he reflect to you about what it meant to take antidepressants, how it helped him?
Well, yeah. He said it's just like you don't fall through the floor anymore. Mm. You know, you just don't – the stuff that's deep in the well is still there. Like your ghosts are still there. These things – the spirits that haunt you are still there. But you are – you know, but this kind of keeps a little cushion there. And you can see – I mean, it's amazing. If you go back and see – the guy has always been prolific. And he's recorded like – there's albums and albums and albums and albums of material. Some of them like actually mixed, you know, final mix, like ready to go, except at the last minute, no, I don't think so.
Hmm.
And what started happening after 2002 or 3 is that all the stuff started coming out. And I think what it did, I mean, it seems like it just gave him the courage to – confidence to say like, yeah, this is done. Let's put it out. He used to take 3-year breaks between records and now it's like –
nonstop.
Like a year, year and a half.
Yeah. I'm talking to Peter Ames Carlin about Bruce, the guy you really don't need to say his last name, is of course, Bruce Springsteen, and Peter's really terrific biography, which is now out in paperback. As this little trip through his life, the next step I'd like to take is post 9/11,
mm-hmm.
The nation kind of reeling from that. And in many ways, Bruce Springsteen had already taken on the mantle of America's balladeer, the spokesperson for America, the singer, the musician for America. But I felt as though when he performed in that benefit performance and did a song called City of Ruins, which mm-hmm. was not written about 9/11, but so perfectly applied in some ways, he totally came into that moment as a salve, someone who was trying to soothe America.
My city's in ruins. Now with these hands, with these hands, with these hands, with these hands, I pray, Lord, with these hands.
Everyone sort of acknowledged that, okay, this is the guy who needs to speak first. You know, and that was a big moment because I think it really did solidify the sense that, you know, that this position or this role that he had been sort of leaning into, which is kind of the sort of Woody Guthrie, the voice of a certain kind of America, middle America. He accepted, you know, at that moment it seemed like that was kind of a really broad-based acceptance that was who he was, that he did have that authority. And that evening of trying to kind of both inspire and sort of soothe, to have it begin with Bruce coming out and singing that, that song. It's like everyone's acknowledgement.
Rise up, come on, 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 rise up.
Springsteen is now 64 years old. Last summer, he barnstormed Europe in a series of concerts that were sweaty spectacles, sometimes 3.5 hours long. Last year, Bruce Springsteen performed and spoke at South by Southwest. Biographer Peter James Carlin says Springsteen impressed the crowd, many of whom had not even been born when he became a superstar.
He carries a lot of weight with him because I think almost alone among artists, he's never really sold out his voice or his image or his philosophy.
Springsteen's keynote to South by Southwest 2012 was career counseling for young musicians.
Rumble, young musicians, rumble. Open your ears and open your hearts. Don't take yourself too seriously. And take yourself as seriously as death itself. Don't worry. Worry your ass off. Have ironclad confidence, but doubt. It keeps you awake and alert. Be able to keep two completely contradictory ideas alive and well inside of your heart and head at all times. If it doesn't drive you crazy, it will make you strong. And stay hard, stay hungry, and stay alive. And when you walk on stage tonight to bring the noise, treat it like it's all we have. And then remember, it's only rock and roll.
This is Radio Somewhere, the record on KUOW. I'm Ross Reynolds.